and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the corn-popping voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Corn-popping, indeed. Yes, how are we, Matthew?
Good, mate. You?
I'm well, very well. Feeling fit, feeling healthy.
Good.
Actually, that's not entirely true. I'm still hugely struggling with hay fever. However, thank you to one avid listener who did send through what could possibly be a solution. So I am going to go and pick that up this afternoon.
I did say, didn't I? I did say I'm sure there is more than the customary over-the-counter prescriptions for hay fever.
Indeed. It turns out I'm not the only one struggling this year. I think there's quite a few. And so big thanks to Asmir Begovic,
lovely,
who did write in and has given me a solution. So I really hope it works. Hopefully picking it up today. So I will stop complaining as of the next podcast.
Good. I'm sure everybody would enjoy that. But talk to me about this popcorn. What's going on?
Yeah, just changed my diet slightly. So I've replaced my evening meal with popcorn.
Go on.
That's pretty much the end of the story. I just thought.
So is this part of a dietary plan?
I mean, it's not one that anyone would recommend, but my thinking is that obviously I have my normal breakfast, have my normal lunch. Look, I'm finding it a lot more difficult to kind of keep the weight off since retirement, and it's just gradually crept up over the last few years. So I'm thinking if I don't have an evening meal, but maybe just have popcorn, which seemingly takes a bit longer to eat and is quite enjoyable, and obviously calories are reasonably low. I'm just, look, it's my diet. I've not necessarily taken this from anywhere, but at the moment it seems to be working.
Where has this come from? What are we talking? Well, just one small bag?
That's the only issue. No, that's the only issue is that by the end of the night, I normally get through about three bags, which is about 1,500 calories and kind of defeats the point of what it is that I'm actually trying to do. But no, I say that. And at the moment, I seem, and my weight, again, I do kind of weigh myself every few days just to keep an eye on it. It is gradually going the right way. I feel like I've got some momentum.
So what are we looking at? We're looking at breakfast,
yeah,
regular, just granola, yogurt, fruit. All the standard stuff.
Yogurt, blueberries, and a little bit of peanut butter.
Okay.
Yeah, really nice.
Perfect.
You. Yeah.
Your lunch is quite epic.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate when it comes to lunch. Yes. We have some really good lunches here.
Quite a slap-up meal for lunch.
Yeah.
And then nothing for the rest of the day apart from three bags of popcorn in the evening.
No, normally that lunch is followed by a power nap. Enjoy a good power nap in the afternoon. And then, yeah, get to about 6 or 7 when I've got very little work left for the day. And that's kind of my treat, is I will have a bag of popcorn, which can turn into 2 or 3.
Okay, I think the question on everyone's lips here is
sweet.
It's sweet.
Well, it
is. Surely it's sweet and salty.
I knew you were going to say that. No, the one I have is sweet, but there's also then a caramelized popcorn I have, which is incredible. It's without, and again, we're not sponsored, proper corn. It's obviously the one that seemingly has become very, very popular, but I understand why. It's very good.
I mean, three bags of just regular, if you were saying three bags of regular, even unsalted, just popcorn without any flavoring, I get it. But sweet yeah, popcorn. I mean, the sugar content.
Well, do you know what it was? And initially it started off as a very good idea because they do the small bags, the mini bags, which are like 50 calories or 60 calories a bag. So like you trick yourself because you have one or two of them and you think, yeah, I mean, that's great. But the problem is then I've then gone to the big bag, which is effectively 6 of the smaller bags. And so now I'm getting through 3 big bags in an evening. Before it was like 3 smaller bags. So gradually it's one of them where I've been offered a bit of popcorn. Go on, try it. So I tried it, and then all of a sudden now I'm addicted.
I'm going to say this isn't a nutrition plan we should recommend
to young
goalkeepers.
No, I mean, at the moment, this seemingly is working for me, but with no scientific background whatsoever. It's just luck, maybe. Maybe it's just the heat, maybe, that is the reason that I've actually lost a bit of weight. I'm not sure. But at the moment, this does seem to be working.
Okay, let's bring it back.
How
can you relate this?
How?
So let's refer back to your nutrition plan when you were a goalkeeper.
Yes.
Did you have a nutrition plan when you were a goalkeeper?
We did. It was very much driven by the club. And
did it include popcorn?
Absolutely not. Absolutely, except when I went to the cinema from time to time and I did enjoy popcorn there. But no, absolutely not. Makes no sense.
Was it different to what it is now?
Yes, very. It was. But you know what? I think this is where the realization, I think every footballer has this, and you see some footballers deal with it better than others. And without naming names, in fact, let's name a couple of names. Maybe like a Razor Ruddock as an example, who's, it's fair to say, got a little bit bigger since retirement, where if you continue with the same intake, I mean, it's just common sense that, of course, you are going to put on weight, because when you're playing, you can have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 calories a day, you know. And I probably didn't fully appreciate just how much strain you're putting on the body when you are getting to the training ground at 9 o'clock. You're not leaving till 3. You know, obviously you're training for a large period of time, you're doing your gym work, but you're just active for 5-6 hours a day. And actually, I think since retirement, sitting behind a desk a lot more like I do now, to actually then try and adjust your lifestyle, eat that much less, is quite tough. And I fully understand why a lot of footballers post-career do have the odd issue.
I'll take that.
There you go.
Okay, we've got a few bits and pieces to come up. Of course, the games are coming thick and fast in the Euros, so we can't react to every single one. By the time this podcast is released, I'd imagine there will already be another game or two played, or by the time people listen to this. So we'll just try and cover what we can when we can.
Absolutely. Sounds good to me.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, we are going to begin with the most recent game, as per this podcast, which was last night. The Netherlands 3, Ukraine 2. And Gheorghe Bushkan, the Ukrainian goalkeeper, with what you might say a game of two halves, perhaps. One heck of a first half, made a series of saves, notably two from Memphis and Wijnaldum. A good one as well from Denzel Dumfries, where he spread. In the second half, he conceded three. There's two that perhaps he can be questioned for.
So let's touch on the first half to begin. And you're right, a couple of great saves. Made a solid save down to his right initially, which I thought reasonably routine, but again, made it look very comfortable. It was a two saves after that that I wanted to highlight. I thought the spread was exceptional. I thought the speed at which he came out, and he's a big guy. Like, he's not, I'd say, the most nimble with his footwork, and it's always tough when you're the kind of size that he is. But the speed at which he came out and the technique he used for the spread, brilliant. He got to within a yard or two, made himself so big, and it is an excellent, excellent save. And similarly, the deflection. You know, you didn't see it straight away that it was deflected, but when you realise it's deflected, even in super slow-mo, it's still very impressive. You know, so to see it in real time, yeah, superb. And then I felt a bit sorry for him in the second half, for a couple of different reasons. One in particular, I think it was the second goal. Not many people touched on it, I don't think, in that for me, he was impeded. It looked like he was almost appealing for offside at first, but I think it was actually more the fact that the guy is on him. So he's trying to get his set position and he just physically can't because he's impeded. So I did feel a bit sorry for him on that one. I think the third one, you look at it and it doesn't look great, and you could see his reaction suggests that he thinks he could have done a bit better. It's either that or it is just the sheer disappointment of having been 2-2, getting back to 2-2 and losing 3-2. But my gut says that he felt himself he might have done a bit better. Now, it's an awkward one. It's a header down into the ground. You've got to judge the bounce off the ground and the parry in order to get it round the post. And it just looked like he mistimed it ever so slightly. Maybe could have been a touch quicker getting to his left, but in the end didn't quite get a big enough hand to it and the ball ended up in the net.
The second one is quite interesting there, because there was a lot of chat about the fact it might have been offside. It went to VAR, but no one actually mentioned the fact, of course, he is impeding the goalkeeper in terms of his vision, but if he's onside, that's fine. No one mentioned the fact that actually he was impeding him by potentially fouling him.
For me, that's quite a big thing. And as an example, I know you're about to catch a volley and someone gives you a quick shove, and then you have to then reset and readjust in order to catch the volley. It does change the complete action that you're doing. So, yeah, again, and you know, I always say this, you guys listening in that have played the position, you'll fully appreciate this. If you're about to save a shot and someone stood on your toes and literally touching you, which he was for a period of time, he had his hand on him, to then have to get yourself in the right position with the body weight slightly forward in a powerful set position, et cetera, can be a little bit more difficult. And actually what ends up happening is, if anything, he is slightly on his heels and isn't able to perform the right technique in order to save the ball. So, yeah, I do feel a bit sorry for him on that. And of course, the first one was another one that was questioned, but this is another one for me, and this is why I say I feel a bit sorry for him, is that this is another one for me that if he stays on his line, there's a great chance the ball comes across. And I know in this situation, the defender and attacker right next to each other, so we don't know exactly what would have happened, but there is a great chance that then the attacker comes in and just passes it into effectively an empty net. So he's tried to be positive. He's tried to affect the situation. And of course, the argument will then be, well, did he parry it into a safe area? Of course, in the end, he didn't, because they've scored the goal. But I think you're almost damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, if anything, had he have stayed and they'd have scored, no one would have questioned him, but it's still the same result. It's still a goal. So I don't mind the fact that he was positive. I guess the only question marks are, can you get two hands to it? Maybe, maybe not. And yeah, can you parry it that little bit wider? But I just think in that situation where you know you've got two people to your right hand side, all you're thinking about is getting it away from them. You're not necessarily thinking about who's coming in. Your most important thought in that moment and the priority is getting it away from the attacker that's coming in. So he did that successfully. And then I guess you're hoping for a little bit of luck, which you just didn't have.
Can we talk about Martin Stecklenburg at the opposite end of the pitch? So 38 years old, he is the oldest player at the tournament. I was having a look at some stats, as you do. I thought I'd go back and look at his career because I remember his time at Everton in the three seasons prior to this one, or the last one where he was at Ajax. He didn't play a single Premier League game. So since 2013, when he joined Fulham, I believe, up to now, that's eight seasons. He's played 101 games in all competitions, which I guess for a goalkeeper that's now starting at the European Championships is not a lot of games, is it?
No, I mean, it's, what's that, averaging just over 12 or so a season, which is nothing. You know, you think about the amount of cup games that a lot of the top teams have, that will constitute your 12 to 15 games a season alone. So, no, it's not at all. And it's one that when he was here, there was a lot of positivity surrounding him without us really seeing what he was about. So it's fascinating to see the journey he's been on. I guess I probably use this as a bit of a reminder. You know, we've got so many different reminders. We talk about Mendy in recent weeks, about his kind of route to where he is now. And I know Stecklenburg, we're not talking the same category as that, but the fact that it's certainly not been plain sailing, but still at the age of 38 to be performing at the level and as well as he is, it's quite a nice message for all goalkeepers out there, I think.
You love to see it. I think it's great. I think the last time he played for Holland at a major tournament was way back when in Euro 2012. He played a couple of years prior, didn't he, in the final of that 2010 World Cup, the defeat to Spain. Prior to that, he'd waited so long for his opportunity just because Van der Sar was so good for so long as the Dutch number one. And now he is competing with Tim Krul. And Frank de Boer, the Dutch manager, did say he just had a feeling. He said this before the game. He just had a feeling that he wanted to go for Martin Stecklenburg. So really good to see. And there was a small suggestion on the first Ukraine goal to make it 2-1. That was a cracker from Andriy Yarmolenko, that perhaps he was too far advanced off his line.
I mean, maybe. Look, it's a great finish, first and foremost. I think what happens just before the strike, he steps forward into the shot. You see a lot of goalkeepers do that, where they'll step into line and then their body weight is naturally forward and they'll explode off that. And effectively, that's what he's done. The problem is, of course, then he's 5 yards or so when he dives. And look, it's one of those strikes that had he have been a yard or 2 yards off his line, then of course, the fact that it's gone high and dipped, he would have had a better chance. And that's why you see a lot of goalkeepers now staying that little bit deeper for these types of shots. But I do think we're really nitpicking there because, look, ultimately it is a great shot. Even if he's 2 yards off his line, it still might beat him. The fact that it is whipped into the top corner in the way that it is, and it is a minor detail. But yeah, if you're going to really nitpick, then you might argue if he's a yard or 2 yards closer to his line, he might have a slightly better chance.
Oldest player at this tournament, but not in Euros history.
Go on.
Who is?
You love doing this, knowing that I'm going to have...
Good mate of yours, previous tournament.
Oh, good mate. What, the last tournament? Mm-hmm.
Last Euros,
and a good mate of mine. Mark Poom?
No, I mean, no. I say good mate. You played with him.
Okay, oh, that's for interesting. A bit. Oh, no, that can't be. Of course, he's American. Let me think. What, a European goalkeeper that I played with,
yeah,
who is setting records somewhere, and I've only been at Brentford, Watford, Blackburn, and Fulham. No.
I'm not actually sure where you played with him.
Did I actually play with this guy?
I think so.
Go on, what's the name?
Gabor Kirai.
Yeah, Fulham. That's why I was waiting for you to give me like a nod. The moment I said Fulham, this is the magic of what we do here, is you then give me a nod, which nobody knows you've given me, and at that point I say his name. Is that right? Was he the oldest?
He was the oldest, wasn't he, in the last tournament for Hungary, yeah.
Okay, did not know that. Well, there you go. Good old Gabor.
We are going to talk about the Denmark-Finland game now, and I think plenty has been said about this in other podcasts, on radio shows, on TV shows, so we don't need to elaborate too much about what happened. Of course, it was a horrible moment for everybody who was watching that game to witness, but just your take on what happened there with the players, with the team, with the fact that the game was played thereafter, your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it was played, like, really baffled me and surprised me. And look, it's hard to kind of put yourself in the shoes or in their shoes to understand how they were feeling going in to continue that game. And I was talking to you off air about one example I've got, which of course does not even come close to this. But the only reason I'm going to touch on it is because of how I felt in that particular moment and how it impacted me, which was a game that I played Brentford Charlton. It was a League One game. about 20 minutes to go, ball comes through and there's a striker running towards me, defender running back, which was Shay Logan, and then I decided to come out. Now, I got there first, just about cleared the ball, but all three of us collided. When we collided, the defender, Shay Logan, went to the ground, and I could see instantly that he was in a really bad way. Like, eyes rolled to the back of his head. He was shaking, like having a fit on the floor, and it scared the life out of me. The docs come on, and you can imagine they're all panicking, stretches, everything. And I've said to the doc, like, what's happened? You know, I'm like losing my head here. What's happened? He said, it's probably bleeding on the brain. It doesn't look good. We're going to rush him to hospital. Now, he then got stretchered off, but of course, there's still 20 minutes left of this game. So in my mind, all I'm thinking about is, I don't know what I've done to this lad. Like, obviously, I didn't mean it. It was completely, you know, it's all part of the game and what have you. But all I could think about for that last 20 minutes was that. As much as I tried to tune into then what was going on, I just couldn't. Remember, we ended up losing the game. Bradley Wright Phillips scoring a goal, but I didn't care. You know, they scored the goal, and I think there's a video, but you could see my reaction. There was no reaction. Did not care at all. Whereas ordinarily conceding a goal was something that I didn't like to do. You know, like, thankfully he was fine when I think he was out for a few weeks or whatever, but thankfully it wasn't as serious as they thought initially. There was no bleeding on the brain, etc., etc. But the only reason I mention it is then for those Denmark players to go back out, having suffered a trauma like that, to be involved in that, you know, and obviously at this point, say best wishes to Christian Eriksen, like everyone has already wished him, because just, I mean, it was just like you say, horrendous moment. I think, like all of us, just sat there in silence for 10, 15 minutes, not knowing what to do, you know, not kind of, yeah, I don't know what, you know, what you were like, but I know I was literally sat there, just didn't know what to do, just literally sat there in silence, watching it unfold, just kind of hoping that it would be all right. But then to imagine, after going through that trauma, the emotional distress that everybody's gone through, to then have to go back out a couple of hours later and finish the game, I don't know how they did it. I really don't. And again, talking from a goalkeeper's perspective, I know a couple of people have mentioned that maybe, you know, Kasper could do a little bit better on the goal. For a start, I don't think it's much of an error anyway. I think it's a header from close in that's bounced in front of him. It is one of those things. The only thing I'd say is then you just consider the state that someone will be in after that. Now, are you going to be at your sharpest when you've been through such an emotional event? Are you going to be as sharp as you absolutely could be? And, you know, we've talked so many times on the show about Kasper Schmeichel and some of the reaction saves he's made, the save he made in the FA Cup final, the reaction to get to his left and make that save. No chance that physically you can get yourself back into the right state of mind and the right physical state in order to play at your best. You do well to get to 80%, 70%. So for me, I know that they were then told they had to play it either then or the next day at 12. I mean, even that, it does just seem so unfair for Denmark. You know, everything that happened, it just seems so unfair.
Yeah, the Denmark manager, Kasper Hjulmand, did say the next day that he thought it was perhaps the wrong decision to play. But all of us, other than those in that dressing room at that time, can only speculate as to what they all said to each other. Martin Braithwaite has since come out today and said it was the least bad decision of the options they were given. And I think that's it really, isn't it? They were seemingly only given two options, play later or play tomorrow. I know Peter Schmeichel was on BBC Radio 5 Live saying he thought it was absolutely ridiculous and that he had spoken to Kasper, but crucially wouldn't speak on behalf of Kasper, because that is obviously for Kasper to do, which he since has done. And I'm actually going to read this now direct from the BBC website, because it's not long been released. It does say, this is an article on BBC Sport, "We were put in a position that I personally feel we shouldn't have been put in." He went on to add that he wished someone in a more senior position had said that it wasn't the time to take that decision and that we should maybe wait until the day after to decide. What has happened, and hopefully they'll learn from this. The article then goes on to say Schmeichel has visited Eriksen in hospital and said it helped him a lot after seeing his teammates smile and laugh. He then said, "We're still in the tournament. Now we have to try and see if we can win this and do it for Christian and do it for all the fans who sat with us and were just as powerless in the situation as we were. I have no doubt that this team has the unity, the strength to be able to come together and go out and do something special." On that note as well, I think we know that Kasper does listen to this podcast. Whether he's listening to it right now while he's on international duty, we have no idea. But regardless of whether he is or he isn't, it's worth noting the part that he played in what happened on that pitch. All the tweets, all the articles, all the praise that has since come in on his conduct hasn't come as a shock to me. I'm sure it won't come as a shock to you or to the listener, because it is a measure of him as a man and as a captain to step up when it mattered most. And you could see from the way that he was organising his team at what was an incredibly fraught moment, the way he was consoling Christian Eriksen's wife and ensuring she wasn't fed any misinformation at all. That was substantiated by Peter Schmeichel on the radio. That's what he was saying. And also just how visibly upset Kasper was at that time. He was just a real pillar when he needed to be.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, I think you've said everything there. It's and that was it. You know, I know that Kasper and a couple of the other Danish players have received, you know, huge plaudits for the way that it was managed, handled. It could have been such a different outcome. And, you know, again, without repeating what's been said so many times over the last sort of day or two, massive credit to Kasper in particular, because I think that, like I say, the situation I talk about pales in comparison to what happened here. So, you know, look, he's had a crazy couple of months as an individual. Of course, we are a goalkeeping podcast, so we're naturally going to talk about the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper's perspective. But you look at the last month for Kasper Schmeichel, talk about highs and lows and, you know, I say life of a goalkeeper. But, I mean, even this is extreme, you know, to go from winning the FA Cup final to having to be involved in something like this and bits that have happened in between. So look, huge credit to him. You know, I really hope that Denmark find a way of pulling together and doing something over the next couple of games, because it does, I use that word again, unfair. It seems massively unfair on them for so many different reasons. You just hope they can find a way to galvanise themselves and actually still have a decent tournament. And of course, once again, we hope that Christian Eriksen pulls through, has a full recovery, and this has a happy ending of sorts.
Couple of good saves to bring up in one of the first games between Switzerland and Wales. Jan Sommer for Switzerland and Danny Ward, who got the nod ahead of Wayne Hennessy and Adam Davies for Wales. A good couple of saves from him as well.
Yeah, two very good performances. I thought the save from Jan Sommer that we're going to touch on in particular, back to his right hand side, I thought it was an excellent save. The fact that he's moved his feet as quick as he has, those who haven't seen it, it's right under the crossbar. He's gone with his low hand effectively, which I think was the correct technique in this situation. But for me, it's just the speed of feet. So he gets himself set. He has to go back on himself very, very quickly. Explodes well up to his right hand side. And it's just a very good technique under the crossbar to tip it over. And actually, interestingly, Danny Ward had a similar one, not quite as difficult, but what I quite enjoyed about the Danny Ward save in the last minute, which maybe wasn't the pick of his saves, but what I liked about it was the fact that his footwork was as good as it was and his positioning was as good as it was. I think for both of these, had they not got their positioning absolutely spot on, you know, took up a position that offered them the most probability of making the save. And I think for Danny Ward in particular, if you watch, it's just a quick movement back to get himself right in order to get to his right hand side and tip it over the bar. And you mentioned a couple of the other saves that Danny Ward made. I thought the save of his feet from the little flick early on was very good. And the reason that I quite liked this in particular was that sometimes shots can take you by surprise. And again, don't need to tell you goalkeepers this, but when shots are taken and you're not set because you weren't expecting the shot, they can sometimes be the hardest save to then try and get yourself set and go. And this was one of them where it was like a back heel almost, wasn't it, through the legs. So he wouldn't have been expecting it, but to react as quick as he did and make the save with his feet, very good. And then the save he made from the powerful shot where he's ended up advancing to about 6 yards. And I thought his decision making was very good here and his reactions were very good, because effectively it became a reaction save. Although the shot was from the edge of the box, give or take, his decision to engage and set at 6 yards in the end proved crucial. And his reactions to then make the save, I think, were very good. I think if he stays deeper, I think there's a good chance the player takes another step forward and it's an easier finish. Similarly, I think if he's deeper, it might be out of reach. By him being a couple of yards closer, he was able to get full stretch to his left and kind of get a tip over the bar. So no, I thought a really accomplished performance and no chance for either keeper on either goal.
You know the boss too, the Welsh boss.
Yeah, no, I just mentioned he was, not that we ever played together, but he was at Watford with me back in the day, Robert Page. Very good defender he was, really good. So it would have been sort of Graham Taylor era. So as I was coming through 17, 18, 19, he was there when I eventually broke through. I think he'd been gone a year or two at that point. But yeah, top guy, really nice person. And he's doing a very, very good job in place of Ryan Giggs.
And that segues delightfully to Gareth Southgate, another top guy, another very nice person, who led England to victory in their opener against Croatia. Just let's touch on Jordan Pickford.
Solid. Thought he was very sharp. Thought his distribution maybe wasn't quite as good at times as we've often talked about. A couple of side volleys that dropped sort of short of the halfway. You could tell he didn't quite catch them. I think one that he's tried to fire out to the right wing that's just dropped a little bit short. There was a pass back that he didn't quite connect with. So there's a few that, you know, by his high standards, maybe weren't quite up to the level he would expect. However, I thought in terms of speed off his line, general handling was fine. There was a good moment at the end in particular where dangerous situation. He's come a good 7-8 yards off his line and just showed he's very much playing on the front foot, really quick in his decision making. So no, I thought generally very solid and always great to keep a clean sheet first game of the tournament.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So before we move on to some of the goalkeeping transfers that have occurred over the past week, Richard, we've got a cheeky keeper caper, which I've not told you about.
You haven't.
Because sometimes I like to do this.
You like to surprise me.
The element of surprise. So
big screen up.
This was sent in by, well, it was flagged to us by Henry Woodcock, but the original tweet was from a gent named Thomas Mulcahy, who is a former hurler based in Ireland. Now, he's tweeted saying, it's St Mirren versus Cork. What a save. Do you want to just describe the scene here?
Looks like a back garden, I think it's fair to say. There's a few viewers, all in their 40s and 50s. Is that fair?
I mean, the women might not be too happy with that. Maybe 30s. I'd say 30s or 20s. But there is a guy who I would say is in his 30s. Looks like a plastic football.
Does look like an air floater, doesn't it?
Does look like an air floater, who has got something in his hand. It's either a beer or a microphone. And he is about to kick the ball. That's what I can see.
Here we go.
Let's watch. Okay, it's definitely a beer. No? Okay. Oh, okay. So the lady in goal, I think it's fair to say. Okay. Right. So is it fair to say the lady in goal is in her 80s?
She's old. Yeah, she's a grandmother.
She's a grandmother. Do you know what? Excellent set position. Excellent set position. She's gone quite a low stance, but I don't know if that's just the curvature in her spine. I'm not sure. But
brilliant.
It's
look
a very it. Good left foot that she reaches out and tips it around the post. And I mean, quite a celebration as well. A lovely moment. A lovely moment.
Absolutely. What a lovely moment. So I saw this late last night, so I don't have any names of who that lady is.
Deirdre.
She, sure she's connected to Thomas.
Yeah.
So maybe we will find out in due course. But yeah, you're never too old to be a goalkeeper.
No. Excellent. Excellent set position. Quick feet to her left. Gets a good foot on it. Puts it around the post. Excellent save.
Okay, good stuff. We are going to finish with a new feature, Richard, aren't we? Because there have been some goalkeeper comings and goings. So let's have a bit of this.
GKs on the way. I say GKs on the way. GKs on the way. I say GKs on the way.
I tell you what, I love every minute of that, mate.
Yes.
That's what I want from you in the Clean Sheet Club. Put it out there.
Okay, right, understood. Understood. Indeed, it is a new feature because, look, we just decided, actually, this is going to be quite a thing over the next, what are we in now? We're in June, so July, August, next 10 weeks or so, maybe 11 weeks of goalkeeping activity, movement all over the place. 6 transfers this week. So let's mention those 6. Firstly, Harry Wright has gone to Fleetwood, joined from Ipswich, of course, the son of Richard Wright. Was a, I want to say, a second-year pro at Ipswich, always very highly rated at Ipswich, but didn't quite break through. So I think it's a really good opportunity for him to get involved at Fleetwood. Whether he's a number 2 or number 3 there, he'll get to link up with new goalkeeper coach. In fact, that's the other one. So many goalkeeper coaches are moving as well. So Lee Kendall is now the goalkeeper coach up at Fleetwood. So he'll be working with Harry Wright next season. So a big good luck and well done to him. Interesting one. Scott Brown. He has moved from Port Vale to Exeter for what I believe is to be a player coach. So he will quite possibly play still because, of course, he played pretty much all of last season and was excellent. But I think what you're seeing, there's a few other goalkeepers that are slipping into this mold as well, where they are getting that little bit older. And actually, the way of League 2 and League 1 at the moment, to have somebody who can cover both bases is becoming something of a powerful position for goalkeepers to be in. So I get the impression that Scott Brown is going there to do both the coaching side and the playing side. Jojo Wallacott has gone from Bristol City to Swindon Town. Jojo, of course, went on loan briefly to Swindon last season. Rennie Gilmartin has gone to Swindon as the assistant manager from Bristol City. So there is a connection there as well. Of course, Steve Mildenhall is still at Swindon as the goalkeeper coach. So an excellent opportunity for Jojo, who's 24, 25 now. One of these goalkeepers that has always been very highly rated, maybe not had the opportunities that he deserved at Bristol City. So a great opportunity now for him at Swindon Town to progress. Joe Day has returned to Newport. Of course, went to Cardiff for a couple of seasons, but he has now returned to Newport to fight it out with Nick Townsend. Tom King is a free transfer as it stands, so no doubt we'll be talking about him as well in the coming weeks, moving somewhere else. Daniel Grimshaw has gone from Manchester City to Blackpool. So Blackpool now have, of course, Chris Maxwell. They've also kept Stuart Moore, who was there as a number two back end of last season. And have now brought in Daniel Grimshaw, who, of course, was on loan abroad. Also on loan at Hemel Hempstead, very randomly, briefly. But 22, 23, I think Daniel Grimshaw is now. He will likely go in as number two, you would think, in the Championship at Blackpool. So a very good move for him. And finally, Paul Farman, friend of the show, has gone to Barrow from Carlisle. So an interesting one. That's kind of not too far. If you're going to go to Barrow, it's probably the closest club, I'm guessing.
It's kind of the opposite of what Scott Brown's done.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. So he's now moved kind of a little bit further towards the coast. Still a couple of hours from Carlisle, I think, Barrow, but it's about the closest team you're going to find to Barrow. So yeah, there you go. That is our goalkeeping roundup.
That is the goalkeeping roundup. Very comprehensive, Richard. Very good. I'm looking forward to this feature moving forward.
There's a lot going on.
There is a lot. And you mentioned coaches there. So David Lucas from Fleetwood Town, he's moved on.
Everton.
Wow.
As the 21's goalkeeper coach. Yeah, there is a lot of movement at the moment in the goalkeeper coach world. So you've got a few others as well that I can't say too much at this point in time. But I think next week it wouldn't surprise me if I named four or five more goalkeeper coaches that have moved or are moving. What you're finding is in the Premier League in particular that more roles are being created. So I mentioned Dave Lucas going in as 23's goalkeeper coach. You're going to see a lot more of that, Premier League clubs and even 18s and below, because I think that there's such a market there for younger goalkeepers at Premier League clubs, and Premier League clubs housing more and more goalkeepers and more goalkeepers going on loan into League One and League Two from Premier League clubs. We're going to see a lot more positions open up, I believe, at the top end.
Get your hours in, guys. There could be opportunities available for you.
There you go.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers
Awake!